Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, farmers will be affected by the changes to capital gains tax announced in last week's federal budget. Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com spoke with Ryan Kerrig, the national leader for agricultural tax with MNP, and he will explain what it all means for farmers. Placements of cattle into U.S. feedlots dropped in March. We'll hear from USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham on that. The plant-based protein industry is focused on improving the price, taste, and texture of its products. Sask Ag Today's Tanner Wallace Scribner spoke with Bill Gruhl, the CEO of Protein Industries Canada, last week, and he will tell us what they're working on that front. And five seats are set aside each year at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine for Saskatchewan students wanting to work in a mixed animal clinic in centers outside of the four largest cities in Saskatchewan. We will hear from one of those students coming up on today's program. So all of those stories, plus much more on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. Farmers will be affected by the changes to capital gains tax announced in last week's federal budget. The changes will make it more complicated to navigate capital gains tax when selling farmland. Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com talked with Ryan Kerrig, the national leader for agricultural tax with MNP.
Let's start with what probably most people consider the good news, the increase in the lifetime capital gains exemption. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely here. So at the start of 2024 here, every individual in Canada is entitled to a lifetime capital gain exemption that they can use on the sale of certain properties here. Now, quite often the farm world, this equates to farmland, sale of quota, qualified farm partnership interest, or even shares in a farming corporation. As of 2024, it had been just over $1 million and change here, but budget 2024 is proposed to increase this up to an even $1.25 million per person. So quite a significant index. Quite a significant increase in this or in the time, but this increase won't come into play until June 25th, 2024, which is the date we can talk more about in a minute. But this is a good thing that was in the budget to help producers and to help those with family transitions and so forth.
Now, on the other hand, there's a extra inclusion rate for capital gains tax in other situations. Can you run through that?
Absolutely, Kevin. This is probably the one that's getting the most news fair lately, is the government has came out with, as they've stated their intention to change the capital gain inclusion rate from its current level of 50% up to an inclusion rate of two-thirds or 66.6% effective June 25th, 2024 again. So really what that means is any appreciation assets where you have capital gains, they're going to get more expensive from a tax perspective after June 25th.
And that's any amount over $250,000?
So this is where the complexity comes into this equation as well. So there's two different ways to look at these capital gains from a personal and a corporate perspective. And we'll start personally first. So on a personal level, your first $250,000 of capital gains in any year will stay subject to the old inclusion rate of 50%. So there'd be no change up to that amount. If you start to have capital gains that are over $250,000 in a given year on a personal level, then you'll pay tax at the new 66% tax rate, or 66% inclusion rate. So it's gonna be a blend depending on, your specific capital gain inclusion rate is gonna be dependent on your income level in a particular year, give or take. So for the corporate side here, it's a little more simplistic in the sense that after June 25th, 2024, the inclusion rate for capital gains in a corporation is going to be a flat two-thirds. There's going to be no $250,000 exemption that would keep you at the old inclusion rate of 50%. So the corporate side, while more punitive, is a little more straightforward in how it's going to operate.
So for an incorporated farm, for instance, an incorporated farm selling farmland will be hit with that full increase in the inclusion rate.
That's correct. Any farmland sold out of an incorporated farm after June 25th will be subject to the higher capital gain rate. So the interesting thing about this June 25th date is it's about 8-9 weeks in the future from the current time here. We're starting to hear a lot of questions out there. Should I be selling my land ahead of time? And that's obviously a personal discussion that needs to be had with your financial and tax advisor to go through it, because it's not always a simple answer in that aspect in terms of where that land exists, if it's held personally versus if it's held corporately. But if you do know that you had corporate land that you were planning to sell in the near term, there's probably a worthwhile discussion to go in and have. Could that transaction be done prior to June 25th to take advantage of those 50% inclusion rates?
And for a corporation selling farmland, that was never eligible for the lifetime capital gains exemption, right?
That's correct. It wasn't eligible. So
it's going to really depend on your situation, too. If you're, you would just recommend that people assess their individual situation, both personally and corporately, with their financial or their tax advisor before making any decisions.
Absolutely, Kevin. That's one thing I would really like to stress here is everybody's circumstances are going to be different. A lot of the discussions will come down to, do you even have any of your lifetime capital gain exemption left, or have you used it personally? Now, we know going forward, people are going to get this enhanced amount come after June 25th, but also, what is the time horizon for this farm? Another common question we've been getting a little bit is, I was thinking about selling my farm in the next year or two. Should this change my time horizon? Well, there's a lot of questions on that one, and tax is only one part of the answer or one part of the equation that needs to be discussed on it, but it's hard to give a blanket generic answer to such a circumstance. So it might come down to, what other options are you looking at? How much land? What is the dollar value you're talking about? And what are your plans for the cash if you were to do it? So there's a whole myriad of factors that need to come in. I don't think there needs to be any rush decisions in this area, but if you're all feel like that might fit your scenario here in the next year or two, it would be definitely worthwhile to get a hold of your advisor and have a discussion about this.
That was Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com in conversation with Ryan Kerrig, MNP's national leader for agricultural tax. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Canadian Food Inspection Agency will continue to refer to highly pathogenic avian influenza in cattle as avian flu in cattle, and not refer to it as bovine influenza A virus, as suggested by the American Association of Bovine Practitioners earlier this month. As of Friday, there has not been a confirmed case of avian flu in cattle in Canada. Officials say it's too soon to say if an eventual positive case will significantly restrict animal movement, as is the case with positive poultry cases. This is a major concern for the cattle industry, as beef cattle especially move north and south across the U.S. border by the thousands. Currently, provincial dairy organizations have advised producers to postpone any non-essential tours of dairy barns as a precaution, in addition to other biosecurity measures to reduce the risk of cattle contracting avian flu. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada made a small amount of changes in its April Supply and Disposition Report released on Friday. Of the changes made, nearly all were slight adjustments to its pulse and special crop numbers. Among the grains and oilseeds, the lone alteration came with corn's domestic use number for 2023-24. AAFC tacked on 300,000 metric tons, raising it to 15.953 million. Despite lackluster canola exports so far in 2023-24, AAFC maintained its projection for 7.7 million metric tons. with the Canadian Grain Commission reporting year-to-date canola exports of 4.37 million tons with 13 weeks to go. One analyst commented they might make 6 million tons at most. Of the pulses, dry pea ending stocks for 2024-25 were cut from 240,000 metric tons in March to 190,000, while those from 2023-24 were reduced from 210,000 metric tons to 175,000. The carryover for mustard was also revised, with 2024-25 projected to be 105,000 metric tons, bumped up by 5,000. The net managed money short position in canola grew for the first time in 7 weeks, as fund traders put on fresh bearish bets in mid-April. That's according to the latest Commitments of Traders report from the United States Commodity Futures Trading Commission. As of April 16th, the net managed money short position in canola futures came in at 106,701 contracts, which was up by roughly 21,000 contracts from the previous week. Open interest in the canola market was down by 5,272 contracts on the week at 264,015 contracts. At the Chicago Board of Trade, the net short position in soybeans was up by about 29,000 contracts to come in at around 155,700 contracts. Soy oil futures saw their net short position grow to roughly 51,200 contracts from only 3,600 the previous week. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 71% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 37, unchanged from the prior week. CN saw a modest improvement in performance as compared to the prior week. In supplying 72% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 37, CN saw performance increase from the 68% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 36. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 15th consecutive week. CPKC performance declined slightly from the prior week, with the railway supplying 70% of shipper orders in Week 37 as compared to 75% in the prior week. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 13th consecutive week. Environmental groups say deals between major water users in southern Alberta to share the resource won't be enough to stave off major drought conditions. The province says 38 municipalities, industry players, and irrigation districts have agreed to cut their water use should there be a severe drought this spring and summer. But the four memorandums of understanding they signed aren't legally binding. They also don't impose regulations under the Water Act or amend the terms of any existing water licenses. The Alberta Wilderness Association is calling on the Alberta government to declare an emergency, which would give it more powers to restrict water use. It says instead the province is content to rely on the goodwill of licensees that can exit an agreement at any time. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's overcast and 8 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Placements of cattle into U.S. feedlots dropped in March. Last Friday afternoon, the USDA reported 1,746,000 head went to feedlots, down 12% year over year. It was a larger-than-expected decline because of aggressive movement in February, following the weather-related slowdown in January. along with generally tighter supplies in many of the major feeding areas. This is USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagum.
This report showed a decline in placements, which was below what a number of industry analysts were expecting. The low number of cattle being placed on feed reflects the fact that we are looking at increasingly tight supplies of cattle outside feed. We still remain in the contractionary phase of the cattle cycle. Feedlots still are selling off the cattle at a rather slow pace relative to history.
March marketings were down 14% at 1,706,000 head, while the total number of cattle on feed at the start of April was up 1% to 11,821,000 head.
If we look at the marketing number, the number of cattle on feed over 150 days, which is sort of a marker of what we use to represent how fast cattle are being marketed, continues to grow well above a year ago as a proportion and as absolute numbers of cattle on feed, which is being reflected in the fact that the weights of cattle being slaughtered have been rather heavy.
Steers and steer calves on U.S. feedlots April 1st were 7.27 million head, or 61% of the total inventory.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 178.05 today. That's up 237. August live cattle closed at 176.40, up 285. May feeder cattle closed at 245.17, up 317. August feeder cattle closed at 258.47, up 497. May lean hogs closed at 96.70, up 47. June lean hogs closed at 105.50, up 67. And that's the livestock market conditions. The plant-based protein industry is focused on improving the price, taste, and texture of its products. SaskAg Today's Tanner Wallace Scribner spoke with Bill Gruel, the CEO of Protein Industries Canada, last week, who says this focus comes as the industry weathers a period of consumer wariness brought on by the rising cost of living.
The plant-based protein industry is focused on improving the price, taste, and texture of its products. We chatted with Bill Gruel, the CEO of Protein Industries Canada, who says this focus comes as the industry weathers a period of consumer wariness brought on by the rising cost of living.
Yeah, we're in Toronto this week at a conference called Plant Forward. And it's really bringing together the full value chain. We've had everyone from producers and genetics companies to ingredient manufacturers and plant-based food companies. A lot of the conversation this week has been around food inflation and the cost of these types of products at the grocery store. That's not unique to plant-based foods. Right now, food inflation is top of mind for everyone. I would say the plant-based food sector, just like all parts of the food ecosystem and the food system, are trying to deliver products to consumers that, you know, both taste good and are nutritious, but are at a price point that, you know, allows people to choose these products without being overly expensive. You know, that's something that they're really striving for.
Inflation and higher interest rates have made consumers a lot more sensitive to price differences. How is the industry looking to address that?
This is true for every industry. Costs of everything are rising. As you say, interest rates are up and, you know, the housing costs are up and fuel costs are up. And so everybody's trying to find ways to, you know, reduce the cost and burden of consumers. And the plant-based food sector is no different. So some of the things that this industry is doing to try to address that is, you know, thinking about this from a value chain approach. And so what we were doing here in Toronto was bringing together all different facets of the value chain, like I said, from producers and genetics companies to ingredient manufacturers and plant-based food companies. So some of the things that we're doing is trying amount of ingredient manufacturing that happens in the prairie region of Canada. And the whole idea is, if we can increase ingredient manufacturing capacity in Canada and in North America, that gives food companies more choice for ingredients and allows them to develop new food products at a larger scale than we have today. That will help bring prices in line that are more affordable to consumers, while also focusing on things like the taste and the nutrition and other things that consumers are interested in.
What else is the protein industry looking to do to help consumers address the cost of living crisis?
One of the big things that we're seeing is companies working together with different people within the supply chain. So one of the things we do at Protein Industries Canada is we fund and support innovation. And in those innovation projects, we're always looking at an end-use product that can be on the store shelf. But what we're doing is we're including the upstream steps in the value chain. So a plant breeding company working together with an ingredient manufacturer that's working together with a plant-based food company. And, you know, as those companies are innovating and looking at different ways of either breeding the seed to contain higher levels of protein content, that has a downstream effect on the processing efficiency because companies are trying to remove the protein at the ingredient manufacturing stage. Higher protein from a breeding perspective means a better rate of protein extraction at the ingredient manufacturing stage, which allows the ingredient manufacturer to provide that ingredient at a lower cost to the food manufacturer. And so if you think about innovation projects with those different verticals of the value chain, we can help reduce and manage costs at every step by taking a whole value chain approach to innovation. The other thing that happens is those companies that are involved in an innovation project then get to know one another. And because the output of one company becomes the input of another company, really then you're creating a business arrangement and tightening up supply chains and creating relationships here in Canada where the ingredients are being used, grown, manufactured, and used in Canada. That reduction in supply chain distance is a really important factor to cost efficiency and managing supply chain integration for the whole value chain.
And what is the biggest challenge facing the protein industry or plant-based products right now?
It's scaling up of that ingredient manufacturing capacity. So your listeners might know of some of the facilities that have been constructed in Western Canada in the last number of years. Large processing facility at Portage La Prairie, Manitoba, by Roquette. There's a large ingredient manufacturing facility outside of Saskatoon at Vanscoy, built by Ingredion. You know, those facilities are measured in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It's large capital investment required to create ingredient manufacturing capacity. So that's not easy to do. It's hard to finance those facilities. And so really achieving greater scale of ingredient manufacturing on the prairies is a major challenge that we're facing. You know, fortunately, we've got companies like Roquette and Ingredion and AGT Food and Ingredients that have made these types of investment, and more companies are looking to do so. I think as we bring more ingredient processing capacity online in Western Canada, there will be a critical mass of ingredients, and hopefully that will help, that scale will help alleviate some of the inflationary costs at the consumer level.
That was Bill Gruhl, the CEO of Protein Industries Canada.
And please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up right after these messages.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. May canola closed at $627.30, up $17.50. July canola closed at $641 per metric ton, up $18.20. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $655.75. That's up 8¾ cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $597.50, up 16 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $570.25. That's up 20 cents. May corn closed at $439.75, up 6¼ cents. May soybeans closed at $11.61 per bushel. That's up 10½ cents. May oats closed at 362.5, up 3.75 of a cent. And that's the commodities update. 5 seats are set aside each year at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine for Saskatchewan students wanting to work in a mixed animal clinic in centers outside of the 4 largest cities in Saskatchewan. It's designed to address the growing need for large animal vets in rural areas. Garrett Beach is a second-year vet student who plans to work in this area following graduation.
So I grew up on a farm about 10 miles north of North Battleford, and we had a couple hundred cow-calf growing up and some feedlot animals along with horses and chickens, you know, the obvious small farm kind of operation. Did a little bit of grain as well.
He tells us what made him want to be a vet.
Initially, it was the veterinarian coming out to the farm to preg check cattle. And I always thought that that would be a very honorable job to have, and with my credentials, I could probably get in if I worked hard enough in university.
Beach says he has a mentor in the North Battleford Clinic.
Yes, that's Dr. Tom Schmidt. He graduated in 1989 from the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. He's been our lifelong vet ever since I was, you know, young. He's been to the farm since around 1990. Tom has always been a very good mentor. He's always been there for me, and he's a very good teacher as well.
He explains what he's learned from him.
Tom showed me how to palpate cattle, which is one huge thing that I saw when I started working in ultrasound. I'd start to know, you know, how things worked and different anatomy of the animals. We would go out on farm calls, and we took out cancer eyes one time, and that really helped me learn suturing, so things along that line.
Beach says dealing with cattle as opposed to pets is a different experience.
Oh yeah, for sure. I love agriculture through and through, you know, and those are my people. That's where I was born and raised. So I do love the large animal sector of veterinary medicine. Not to say I don't like the small too, but I have a bit of a preference. Call me biased.
He outlines his plans for this summer.
I'll be working at the Battleford Animal Hospital with Dr. Sylvia Carley, who now owns the clinic, with Tom Schmidt.
Beach notes it takes a long time to become a veterinarian.
The Bachelor of Agriculture really helped me out. It helped me get a better understanding of maybe the science behind agricultural focuses in cattle. Just the maturity, too, you get out of a bachelor. And then applying, that really helped, too, because it, you know, I take classes like physiology and anatomy in undergrad, and that really helped when I was learning the vet school classes as well.
He notes he still has a lot of schooling to take yet.
I got 2 more years after this. I have 3rd year, and then there's 4th year, which is just about all clinical rotations.
Beach then talks about his long-term plans.
My plan is to live rurally in Saskatchewan. I would also like to practice, you know, mixed animal, mostly large animal. And, yeah, if I could work in North Battleford, I would. You know, we'll see where the jobs are when I get out, but I'm sure they won't be hard to find with the shortage and all that, so.
He adds he has a major role with the Veterinary Students Association.
Yeah, so I'm now the president of the WCVSA. What we do is we manage all the finances that come off of the WCVM students, and we plan events like graduating and parties, just general health and well-being too of the students as well in the college.
Garrett Beach is a second-year student at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's been 2 years now since Senator Rosa Galvez introduced what is generally known as the Climate Aligned Finance Act in the upper chamber. Its formal name is Bill S-243. It was introduced in the Senate, and once it goes through rigorous discussion by Senate Banking Committee, it will head to the House of Commons for its perusal. It's aimed at helping align Canada's financial system with the federal government's climate goals. That's a description from Liberal MP Ryan Turnbull. The bill is supported by the Liberals, NDP, and also Green Party leader Elizabeth May. But it's sending up red flags for several industries, including the oil and gas sector, and also agriculture. Kathy Jo Noble with the Agriculture Carbon Alliance outlined some of their concerns about S-243.
Farmers have a proven track record of reinvesting available capital back into their operations to improve efficiencies, productivity, and ultimately the sustainability of their operations. Thus, our concern with S-243 is that it may undermine the access to loans that are essential for the growth and sustainability of Canadian agriculture. The bill includes agriculture and land use activities in the emissions description, and the legislation defines federal institutions as banks, credit unions, but also Farm Credit Canada. These are organizations through which farmers seek financing. Ultimately, the legislation may further complicate the process of applying and accessing to keep farms afloat. It will create unnecessary regulatory burden that either takes time away from farming or requires the assistance of accountants or consulting firms, thus adding additional costs to the farmer. Canadian agriculture is well into its journey towards adopting environmentally sustainable production practices. To continue this commitment, additional capital investment is needed, necessitating increased access to loans. Any legislation that creates more barriers to accessing these funds is counterintuitive to the sustainability goals of the sector and the country.
That's Kathy Jo Noble with the Agriculture Carbon Alliance.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Just a reminder that the 2024 Crop Diagnostic School is coming up July 24th to the 25th. That'll be held in Melfort, Saskatchewan. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. And that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program.